Morning, everyone. This is a regular meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board of Employees Retirement System of the City of Milwaukee. It is Tuesday, December 21st, and it's approximately 9:04 a.m. Could we have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Bell?
Here.
Mr. Campbell?
Here.
Ms. Ford?
Here.
Ms. King?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Mr. Kovak?
Here.
Ms. Sawa?
Here.
Mr. Conrad?
Here.
Quorum?
Thank you. Mr. Siddiqui, could you tell us who's at the meeting in addition to the board members we just heard from?
Sure. So we got Ms. Sawa, Mr. Gopalan, Mr. Silver, Ms. Ford, Mr. Sawa, Mr. McGuin, Mr. Jackson, Ms. Dirk, Mr. Bell, Ms. Johnson, Mr. Jakin, Ms. King, Mr. Kovak, Mr. McLean, Mr. Conrad, Mr. Cartwright, Mr. Klusman, Mr. Lubarsky, Mr. Allen, Mr. Campbell, Mr. Stepped up for a second, Ms. Wills, and Terry Siddiqui.
Okay, thank you. The first order of business is the approval of the minutes of our regular meeting held November 23rd, 2021. Is there a motion to approve?
Mr. Campbell, I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Is there a second?
Mr. Bell, second.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. The motion has been made and second. Any objections to approval of the minutes? Hearing no objections, the minutes are approved. The next item is the Chief Investment Officer's report. Mr. Zilber, is there something to report in addition to what we have to go in a closed session for?
Mr. Chairman, I think I'll just make a couple comments and turn it over to Eric to give a performance update, and then and then we can go into the closed session item if that works for everybody. Okay. No, just briefly, before I want to turn it over to Eric, I want to mention that we've made significant progress on the fixed income structure implementation. This was the one approved last month in November. So last week, there were two main changes, right, in the new fixed income structure. One had to do with replacing the U.S. index with the U.S. government index. So that trade is done. It's been completed. We were able to sell completely out of the U.S. Ag index last week. We took about $70 million out of it, and we put the remainder in the government bond index, which will be continued to be managed by BlackRock. If you remember, the second big piece of the fixed income structure was increasing REMS's allocation. So that $70 million that came out from the transaction from the indexes was deposited with REMS. We're not completely done with the fixed income structure implementation. We're trying to look ahead and minimize our transaction costs. So we know that there will be some big flows into the funds early next year. For example, we expect a large inflow from the city and the agencies for the annual contributions next month. So we're going to kind of time those cash flows into the fund to also help assist us in implementing the new fixed income structure. But we've made a lot of good progress, and it feels good to have gotten that what we can done before year end. The other piece I want to mention, I know that Eric in his report usually at the end will talk about monthly manager withdrawals, where the money's coming from. I just wanted to point out that this is really probably the first month where the asset allocation memo that we reviewed and approved back in September started to come into consideration. If you remember, what that did is it allowed staff to take more of a risk approach, a more of a whole fund holistic risk approach into account when we're taking money to pay benefits every month. So as you know, we're about 2% overweight private equity. Our private equity allocation, which is illiquid, so we can't do anything about that overweight for the time being, and that's our highest standard deviation asset class. So even though we also went into December with a slight underweight to stocks, you know, that's our second highest standard deviation asset class. So what we're allowed to do clearly now is roughly try to offset the overweight to private equity with an underweight to public equity. So when we were going this month and we were close to target with public equity, you're still going to see that we're taking money from public equity managers, even though that asset class is slightly underweight, with the goal of, you know, getting more aligned, more offsetting those two allocations. So we appreciate that flexibility to view the portfolio and the risk that it's taking from that perspective when we're making these decisions. And, you know, the last thing I was going to mention, just in case I don't have a chance to do it before the end of the meeting, I want to wish everybody a happy holidays, happy new year. For those of you that celebrate Christmas, Merry Christmas, and thank you again for all of your support. If there aren't any questions of anything that I said, we can turn it over to Eric to give a performance update.
Okay, thank you, David. Does anyone have any questions for David? Okay, we'll move on to Eric then. Mr. Sawyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The fund ended the month of November with a value of $6.01 billion. The return of negative 1.3% gross of fees underperformed the blended benchmark by approximately 8 basis points. You can see in the table to the right that the fund is outperforming in the year-to-date 1, 5, 10, and 20-year time periods and has underperformed over the 15-year period on a net of fee basis. The main relative performance drivers in November, style bias was the primary detractor at 27 basis points, and this was primarily from the fund's value and small cap exposures. Within manager selection, Luma Sales was the main detractor at minus 8 basis points. And then partially offsetting some of the underperformance was the fund's real estate managers. We had nice reports come in from two of our core real estate managers and actually from one of our non-core real estate managers, which added to relative performance. As of Friday, December 17th, the fund was up approximately 1.1% in December, which brought the year-to-date return to up 15.6% net of fees, and the approximate value is $6.08 billion. 13 of the fund's 15 active mandates are outperforming year-to-date on a net of fee basis, and the total fund, along with all of the fund's asset classes, are exceeding their respective benchmarks net of fees. Year-to-date, the fund has generated investment gains of $859.3 million, paid out benefits and expenses of $421.0 million, and received contributions of $107.1 million. So David brought you up to speed on some of the larger flows that we've had this month with respect to asset allocation, specifically with monthly withdrawals to pay benefits. The fund took $15 million from the S&P 500 index, $5 million from DFA U.S. Small Cap Value, $4 million from BlackRock Russell 1000 Value Index, $3 million each from Ernst & Poulin, and $2 million from the DFA U.S. Large Cap Value Strategy. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them at this time. Otherwise, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Sawyer. Are there any questions on the report?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Klusman?
Yes, Mr. Klusman.
Eric, what do you think is, I see the withdrawals are about $32 million. So far we've paid out $421 million. What do you project a year end to come in at, a little more than $450 million?
Yeah, I think we're running 36, 37 million a month at this point. So, yeah, a little, you know, 450,
6, 5.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm just, I just to point out to the listening public, when you look at that portion of your report here with the, what's going to be a $455-56 million outlay with the contributions of 107, about 27 of that coming from the employees themselves. And as we enter 2023 and we hear people talk about this system being an albatross around the city's neck, or words to the effect that it threatens the very existence of the city, those expenses and benefits are really deferred compensation for services that the city received from its employees. And for this system to be paying out $456 million with such a small contribution is more of a blessing or a godsend than a threat or a leech on the city. So I just want to point that out, because that really jumped off the page at me when I was reviewing this report, and we should always remember that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Klusman. Any other questions or comments? All right, our next item is item 2A, approval of hedge fund funds manager search finalists. This is an item that will be discussed in closed session. Therefore, please be advised that the Annuity and Pension Board will vote to convene in closed session on the following item: approval of hedge fund fund manager search finalists as provided in section 19.851E of the Wisconsin statutes, to deliberate or negotiate the purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session. The board may then vote to reconvene an open session following the closed session. Do we have a motion to go into closed session on this item?
Mr. Campbell,
I'll make the motion.
Thank you. The motion having been made and seconded, we have a roll call, please.
Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Ford?
Aye.
Ms. King?
Aye.
Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
Mr. Kovac?
Aye.
Ms. Sawa?
Aye.
Mr. Conrad?
Aye.
Quorum. And just say the time and I'll pause the recorder. Thanks.
All right, the time is 9:17 a.m. and then it's 9:36 a.m.
One second, please. Okay.
All right. Do we have a motion to approve hedge fund of fund manager search finalists as recommended by Callan?
I'll make the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Do we have a second?
Ms. King will second.
Thank you, Ms. King. Any objections? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Thank you, Callan, for your appearance today. Our next item is the investment committee report. And Mr. Bell, do you have that report?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the investment committee report regarding the meeting for December 9th. At the December 9th meeting, staff provided a performance update. Staff also discussed the tentative timelines for both the implementation of the fund's new fixed income structure and for the hedge fund of fund manager search, respectively. Next, at that meeting, staff presented two approval items, one being an update to the statement of investment policy, and the other item to approve a contract amendment with BlackRock. The main changes with the investment policy were incorporating the new fixed income structure changes into the policy that were approved in November of this year. The main change in the BlackRock contract amendment was to allow BlackRock to replace the fund's current investment in the U.S. Aggregate Bond Index with a new investment into BlackRock's U.S. Government Bond Index. With the delay approval of the BlackRock contract amendment, would have likely made it difficult to make meaningful progress before the end of 2021 in implementing what Callan said is a better risk-adjusted fixed income structure, staff utilized its authority to execute an investment-related contract that was approved by the investment committee per the board rule 7.2.2.B. Next, staff presented a tentative 2022 due diligence schedule. And finally, UBS, the fund's hedge funds of fund manager, gave a presentation to the committee. With that, the investment committee recommends approval of the following item: approval of statement of investment policy updates. Mr. Chair, that's all.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Mr. Zilber, do you have any comment on the approval of the statement of investment policy update?
We discussed this at the investment committee meetings. So I mean, the main changes had to do with really incorporating the new fixed income structure, establishing the new guidelines for that new BlackRock, which included, I guess, establishing new guidelines for the BlackRock government bond index fund that we moved into from the U.S. Ag Index. There was some small language. We tightened some language in there as well, related to the minimum maximum ranges as part of the asset allocation memo back in September. But happy to refresh board members if necessary on that item. I think the red line is included in the board package as well.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Zilber. Any more questions on this item? All right, hearing none, do we have a motion to approve the statement of investment policy update?
Mr. Campbell, I'll make the motion.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Campbell. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Any objections to the update? Hearing none, the motion passes. Mr. Allen, it's now 9:40. Do you know if our lawyers are ready, or should we go on to the next item?
They are not on the line yet.
All right. Then we'll go on to item number 4. Administrative and Operations Committee report. Could we have that report, please?
Sure. Good morning, Chair and Committee members, board members. Molly King. I was Chair of the Board in the December 15th meeting. The absence of the Chair of the A&O Committee. The committee went into closed session to discuss the mailing services, the RFQ that was submitted out in 2021, and only United Mailing Services, which is our current vendor for both the city and for seniors, responded. We have had a contract with United Mailing Services since May of 2017, and it is due to expire in April of 2022, I believe. Two other vendors did not respond to the RFQ, and two vendors replied that they do not have the capability to perform SEMR's requested services. So the only RFQ that was on the table is United Mailing Services, and they propose a price increase of approximately $220. This is based on the past annual expenses. Currently, the city attorney is drafting a renewal contract for the March board meeting. The next item that was discussed and is before this board for approval is a technical correction for the 2020 expense reimbursement. This was a non-fiscal impact correction that was identified by the staff at CMAR, and which they have consulted the auditors on. basically what happens is funding about $252,217.50 was journaled to the non-trust expenditure account instead of the trust expense account. Again, this results in no fiscal adjustment necessary, just a journal entry, in other words, a technical correction. And third item that was on the agenda, the annual committee, was the audit report, which was also done in closed session. The committee received and discussed and placed on hold all three operational audit report provided by CLA, our internal auditors, Clifton Myers and Anderson. The audit conducted were the assessment of entity level controls, contribution process audit, and investment management process audit. All three audits report were clean, and there were no findings or recommendation at this time. And two other items that also were discussed is the IT project portfolio. The committee received and present regarding the status of the IT projects and also personal updates. So the committee did receive and report on the progress of recruitments of their current vacancies. And that is what was discussed and concluded the annual committee. One recommendation that I had asked for the committee is to see if we can refer the audit for the election process for board members to be evaluated by, see what the board thinks about that. The last time the audit was completed was back in 2009, and the recommendation at that time was not adhered by the board. And so it's approximately 12 years later, and as I outlined in the ANO committee, that the landscape of election and voting has changed and it's been, transitioning. And so wanted to see if we can have a recommendation from the board to reevaluate or let our auditors review the process we've had currently for the election voting for board members. Pardon me, my asthma is acting up, so if you did not hear anything, let me know and I'd be happy to repeat that. So that's basically where we stand on the ANO committee.
Thank you, Ms. King. Are there any questions or comments on the committee report? Right here, none.
Mr. Chairman, the auditors recommended that we ask the board to approve the technical correction.
Right.
What you were going to do.
Right. So what I was going to get to, the approval item from the committee is to approve the technical correction with the 2020 expense reimbursement report. So do we have a motion to approve?
Mr. Kloster, one motion.
Thank you, Mr. Kloster.
I'll second that motion.
Thank you. Any objections? Hearing none, the motion passes. Mr. Tzatziki or Mr. Allen, do we have our lawyers online?
Yes, I've got Avi and Avi just joined.
All right. We're going to jump ahead at this point to item 8, pending litigation report. And we will do this item in closed session. So please be advised that the Community Pension Board will convene in closed session. The following item, pending litigation report, as provided in 19.851G, Wisconsin State Statutes, to confer with legal counsel concerning strategy to be adopted by the body with respect to litigation in which a user is likely to become involved. The board may then vote to reconvene an open session following a closed session. Do we have a motion to go into closed session?
Mr. Campbell, I'll make the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Do we have a second?
Oh, second.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Roll call, please.
Mr. Bell?
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Ford?
Aye.
Ms. King?
Aye.
Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
Mr. Kovac?
Aye.
Ms. Sawa?
Aye.
Mr. Conrad?
Aye.
quorum, and if you please say the time, I'll pause the recorder.
Okay, it is 9:48 a.m.
Thanks.
10:16 a.m.
Hold on one second, please.
All right, go ahead. All right, we're now in open session. And the next item is new business, a retirement death claims and refunds for November.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Jerry Allen. And so in your packet, you have the normal monthly listing of retirements, death claims, and refunds for the month of November. No exceptional items to report that I know of anyway. If anybody has any questions or comments on that, I'd be happy to respond to it.
Any questions or comments on those issues? Okay, so the matter will then be placed on file. The next is conference requests for December, or should say conference requests.
Do we need a
motion to approve payroll?
Mr. Chair, this is Mr. Campbell. I'm going to make a motion to approve payroll.
Oh, thank you. Do we have a second?
Four seconds.
King will second.
Thank you. Any objections? No objections. The motion passes. Great. The next is conference requests. Mr. Allen?
There are none as well.
Well, all right. Then we move on to item C, proposed 2022 board committee meeting dates.
Okay, in your packet, this is Jerry again. In your packet, you have a proposed list of meeting dates. We also submitted electronically a change to the hard copy that's in the packet. And that, specifically, that is for the November meeting of 2022. The hard copy in the packet called for a meeting on the 23rd, which is the Wednesday right before Thanksgiving.
Mr. Allen, somebody has to mute their mic because I'm hearing a lot of background noise from somebody.
Okay.
Mr. Bell, I believe that's your line.
Okay.
So I'm just trying to alert the board to a proposed change that we sent out via email for the November meeting. After discussion internally, we suggested it be on the 22nd, which is a Tuesday. The previous date that was suggested was the day before Thanksgiving, and it was pointed out that that might be inconvenient for trustees who may be traveling over the holiday. So, and I gather the investment staff was going to be impacted by that as well. So, that's, if you would mark that on the sheet that you have in front of you, that would be useful. Proposed change to the 22nd of November for the board meeting. That is a Tuesday. And I would note that most of the other meetings are Tuesdays as well, with one or two exceptions.
Mr. Chair.
All right. Is there a question or comment?
This is Mr. Campbell. Historically, we've had an investment committee meeting in January, and that meeting has been one that's kind of been special because we've always had Luma Sales come in and present, and just kind of become accustomed to listening to Mr. Fuss and his words of wisdom. Is there any possibility that we're going to try and make that happen again, or is that not an option for this year?
David, can you tell the board what you've learned about that?
Yeah, I'm happy to comment on that. I share your sentiments, Mr. Campbell, as well. I mean, I guess the only thing that was the reason why that always happened in January, it wasn't necessarily because we scheduled it in January. It's because Mr. Fuss was already, he planned a trip with the CFA Society in Milwaukee every January to travel to Milwaukee, be there in person, give a presentation, and then we asked him to work around our, we just told him we'd work around his schedule to whatever date it would happen, we'd do our best to make ourselves available that date. I guess a couple of things. I know the CFA Society in Milwaukee doesn't have anything planned with Mr. Fuss in person in January. Mr. Fuss also retired from being a PM on our account at the beginning of last year. So, I'm definitely, one of my projects for this year is going to be to kind of, not just with Loomis Sales and Mr. Fuss, but also with some of our other investment managers, trying to figure out the best way to, whether it's virtual or in person later in the year, to try to make that happen, even if we have to have maybe some designated days where they're not necessarily on the proposed calendar year, but they're days where if members are available, we can just have a few hours dedicated to hearing from our investment managers and interacting with them. And I mean, certainly Mr. Fuss and Loomis Sales would be involved in that. But I don't think January is going to happen. That I'm not looking at necessarily. I don't think it's feasible for January to be that month this year, or in 2022.
Well, that makes sense. And that being at the was coincided with the CFA meeting sometime during the year. Even if it's going to be a heavy lift for him, it might be nice just to extend the invite to sometime during the year, if it's even possible. Thank you.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. It's been one of my favorite days as long as I've been here as well. And I'm glad you gave me a chance to talk about it too, because it only brings back good memories. So.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Klusman.
Yes, Mr. Klusman.
The committee dates that I received in my packet, I checked and I'm fine with, and the November listing is for the 22nd Tuesday. So I'm a little thinking aback that maybe I've got a different copy, because Jerry just mentioned that it said Wednesday. Could Terry maybe post the dates we're going to be looking at and voting on? Because I've already received several iterations of these dates, and we know, okay, yeah, that's the one I got, the one he's looking at there. So we've got a couple Wednesdays in April, and yeah. As long as that's the, if something's got to change on what Terry's got on the screen right now, we can discuss this, but I'm fine with these dates.
We had no further changes from this post schedule.
Good. Okay. Okay. A motion, if you need a motion to, do we need one or no?
Jerry, do we need a motion for this or?
No.
I don't think so. Okay.
Okay. Well, we're using our calendar then.
Yes, put on a calendar, and if there's any changes in the year, they will inform us timely.
Okay.
So that matter will be placed on file. The next item is item 5D. Next item is item 5D, review of board rule 2A2. And this board rule governs the composition of the board. And the provision we're discussing states, as the board membership, the city comptroller ex officio, or in case of sickness or absence, his or her deputy. So any comments or discussions on this issue?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Klusman, I guess I should speak to it since I asked for it.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I think I owe you at least that much. Just to start out, there's nothing personal here at all regarding the ICA or her deputy. This came to mind several times over the years, and I can't reconcile it, so I'm asking that we get some reconciliation from Patrick and possibly from you fellow board members. I don't see, my concerns here are that, one, I don't see any provision for this in Chapter 36. Now, I'm the lawyer, so that's why we're going to ask Patrick. I'd like to ask Patrick to take a look. But Chapter 36 is clear as it delineates each person that sits on this board, and it just simply says the comptroller does not provide for a surrogate. Again, each of us on this board are elected or appointed, and those that are even appointed are then confirmed through the full council. I don't see any other situation like this. Even council members, when they're absent, their seat is marked absent. They don't have the opportunity to appoint a surrogate to sit in their place, nor do any of the other seven of us that sit on this board. So if there's a reason for it, I'm probably going to ask that this be extended to all eight of us, but I'd like to find that out first. And I guess what drove me to this is not to make more work for anyone, but I just took my third oath of office for my upcoming third term, and in that oath we all swear that we're going to not permit anything that seems incorrect, and I haven't yet to have confidence that that's not going on here. Particularly, and lastly, and I'll close this up, is that Mr. Benson, and again, no offense to him personally, but I know that he has not sat in on any of our fiduciary training. We all have to, we're told in our fiduciary training how important and responsible our votes have to be, and then he steps in and he's casting votes on this board, and he has not done that, nor has he been placed on this board by an election or an appointment and a confirmation process. So I think it's about time we look at this and find out how this originated and if it's appropriate.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Klusman. Mr. McLean, are you prepared to address this, or do we need to initiate a more formal process?
Mr. Conrad, I'd like to make a couple comments as well. This is Aicha.
Sure.
Okay. I just wanted to kind of start off, and I guess maybe Mr. McLean can go into it in a little bit more detail, but as the charter states, the city comptroller is on the board, you know, ex officio, which means by virtue of office, as, you know, the chief financial officer of the city. So the deputy comptroller by default also is a person that steps in for the comptroller, and they are also a financial expert. I guess the other thing I do want to add, which is which kind of concerns me why this is coming up now, is because years ago when I was the deputy comptroller and Comptroller Mattson at the time was out on a family leave too, I guess, I stepped in for him, and you know, there were no issues then. And I will say I did vote on some very important matters for the board, which is, you know, I voted as per the direction of Comptroller Mattson at that time. So I guess the city comptroller is really on there by virtue of their financial expertise, and the deputy is appointed by the comptroller because they do also, you know, are a financial professional as well. So I guess at that point, those are really my comments. I am a little taken aback by this, you know, just as I was out on leave, and now all of a sudden it became this, you know, I guess, topic of the day. But I'll defer to Attorney Patrick McLean at this point.
Thank you. Yeah, I think Mr. Klusman's primary question concerned the legality of this, I think. So we'll turn over to Mr. McLean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and trustees. Yeah, I had a chance to look at this, and you know, the board rule, of course, that we're talking about authorizes the comptroller or recognizes that Chapter 36 appoints the comptroller as an ex officio trustee, and then goes on to state that in the cases of sickness or absence, the deputy may fulfill that role. And in looking at this, it really, that rule tracks state law, which essentially recognizes the similar capacity for a deputy comptroller to serve in the place of the comptroller as the state statute puts it, in absence or disability. So really pretty similar language there. And I suspect, and again, I wasn't around when this rule was developed, that that's why that language tracks that way. So I'm certainly happy to encapsulate this in a formal opinion if that's the pleasure of the board, but the ERS rules really just sort of capture what state law already recognizes, which is that the comptroller's deputy can stand in for the comptroller under certain circumstances. And because the comptroller's position on the board is ex officio, as I just said, related to the office, that it's appropriate for a deputy to be able to stand in and exercise those duties of the office, which include obviously serving as a trustee. So I guess to summarize and distill this down into a single sentence, really, the board rule really just reflects sort of a commonly understood notion that's already reflected in state law. And because it's an ex officio position, it's logical that that would apply to the trustee obligations as well. So I'm happy to expound on that in any way or answer any questions anyone might have.
Yeah, just to circle back around, I see that Terry has our board rule on up on the screen, but our board rules are subject to affecting City Ordinance Chapter 36, right, Patrick? Correct?
Yes, yeah, if there was a conflict, Chapter 36 would prevail over the board rules.
And Chapter 36, this is why I bring this up, is clear and says 3615 Section 2B, the city comptroller ex officio, and it ends there. It doesn't say or, and then go on to some of the other verbiage that Ms. Sawa just explained. I'm fine with your opinion if you say this derives its authority from state law, and that's the reason I asked. Again, it was nothing personal, and so I guess I would just, to wrap this up, I would like, I think it would be beneficial for you to reduce this to writing so that we have something that says what you're saying now, because words are always forgotten and minutes always get buried in years and years of board meeting minutes. So then we have something that shows where this authority comes from. And then in the future, that I would, and I can only suggest this, that someone like Mr. Benson be brought into fiduciary training. If he's anyone that's going to cast a vote on this board should be very familiar with that training.
I would agree to that, Mr. Guzman. That is a good idea.
Yeah, and I'll be happy to provide a formal opinion to the board. I would ask perhaps Mr. Allen if you could encapsulate that in a written request to the city attorney's office.
I will, and I would like to mention also that there is in fact already a formal opinion on the subject that was written in the 1970s. It was a very brief opinion, didn't really give a rationale, it just said it was okay for the deputy to fill in for the comptroller. I'll send you a copy of that, Patrick.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, go ahead.
I was gonna say that since this is in the state statute, and we recently had a litigation over changing the makeup of the board, and I believe the Supreme Court held that because the makeup of the board was in the state statute, irrespective of our home rule authority, we couldn't change the makeup of the board. So it seems to me that seems to be pretty well encased in concrete.
Yeah, the original enabling statute did not, as I recall, I don't have it up, but I don't believe that the laws of 1937 or 14.7 specifically recognize the deputy as able to fill in for the comptroller. I think that language reflects what's in Chapter 36 right now. It's other provisions of state law that recognize that the deputy comptroller can fulfill the functions of the comptroller in their absence. So it's those statutes working together that really create this authority. It's, you know, I would call it implied authority, but I'd say it's very close to express authority for this rule to be in its current form.
So, I agree with you. I think, though, when you write the opinion, you should look at the original state law to see what it says or doesn't say on the issue. In light of that, though, the court opinion. All right. I don't think we need to take any action on this. Mr. Allen, I assume you're going to make a request for an opinion?
Yes, I will.
Does anyone feel we need to pass a resolution to that effect, or I think you have the discretion to request legal opinions without authority of the board. Is that correct, Mr. Allen?
That is correct.
Okay. We'll then move on to medical reports, all duty and ordinary disability applications.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in the packet, the monthly packet, there are two reports. The first one is for the medical panel approvals report. All of these were re-examinations. They're all recommended for approval by the medical panel physicians. The second report is for the medical council, and these are all also re-examinations, and they're also all recommended for approval by the medical council. And that's what we have for this month.
All right, so is there a motion to approve the medical reports?
This is Molly, I'll make that motion.
Is there a second?
Glassman will second.
Any objections? Hearing none, the motion passes. The remainder of the items on the agenda, we have unfinished business, pending legal opinions and service request report.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. McLean has done a good job, as always, in keeping us up to date on legal opinions, so there's nothing new to report in that part one. And plus, Patrick, unless you have something you want to say about that?
No, nothing to add. Thank you.
Okay. And the same for outside counsel opinions on service requests, which is part three on the report. The request for availing services, RFQ, as was mentioned earlier, there's been an RFQ, and the city attorney's office is working on a contract which they will have for us in time for a future meeting to enter into this contract before it expires. And so our staff is working with the CA's office to get that contract completed, and we'll bring it as soon as it is. On the service request for outside legal counsel, on the investment committee agenda, it was approved back in December the 9th. There was an agreement with BlackRock for investment management, and that was approved, as I mentioned, on the 9th of December. The legislation report, moving to the next item, if I may, Mr. Chairman. That's
yes, go ahead.
Item B, okay. The first item was a substitute resolution for authorizing city departments to exceed monetary monies appropriated for 2022 to expend, not to exceed, I'm sorry. And that's a routine housekeeping item. It's on the common council agenda, and it was adopted on the 14th. Nothing further to talk about on that one. And then on the pension contribution offset, nothing new to report, but I have something in executive director's report on the pension contribution offset that I'll mention as we move into that. So those are the only things we have for the pending legal and legislative reports at this time. And then on the executive director's report, just briefly, personnel update, there's really no change at this point. On a network administrator position, we're still trying to recruit for that position. On member services, we have new retirees on the payroll that number approximately 55 for November, and 33 are currently anticipated for December. And we did hold a retirement workshop back in November. We reported on that previously, though. And also, there's a breakdown on the benefit, to date on the counts for benefit payments. It's a typical housekeeping item in our report. Financial services, the 2022 employer contribution prepayment options notices were sent to the city agencies. As you may recall, the city has customarily prepaid in order to avoid interest charges in the actuarial evaluation. And so we extend the same opportunity to the other employers. They typically don't take advantage of this, but nonetheless, we send a bill every December, and these contributions for this year are due at the end of January, and that, I'm sorry, for 2022, the employer contributions are due at the end of January 23. So we send out letters giving the employers an estimate that's contained in the valuation so that they have, you know, an opportunity to take advantage of that. On the MPSO item I mentioned earlier in the pending litigation or legislation report, we have now completed the retro payments or calculations for the MPSO members. They came out of the litigation over the 5.8% pension contribution offset. And there were 13 members and one beneficiary that will receive the retro payment with their December checks this month. And so that will be going out shortly. On the last item for financial services, the CPI cost of living adjustment for our plan, we expect to a benefit increase of approximately 3%, exactly 3% rather, not approximately, on their retirement anniversary date that occurs in 2022. The CPI index was substantially more, but there is a 3% cap under the city charter, so there will be a 3% benefit paid. This item affects the police and fire members of our plan. Information services, a number of items there, they're all pretty much up to date, and progress is being made on all these items. Everything is clean and green, as I like to say. So that's all pretty good news. Thank you, Jeff, for, you know, keeping track of that. On administration, I think I wanted to mention a little bit more about this proposed legislation that would provide for sales tax revenue and close the ERS to new hires. The notable item here is the budget office has engaged the actuary at the city's expense, not at the ERS expense, to prepare a model of the financial impact on pension funding requirements if this proposed sales tax and pension legislation were to be enacted. However, to date, this bill has not even been introduced into the legislature, so it's probably a ways from being enacted. So the proposed bill, as I mentioned, would close both the city and the county plans to new hires in favor of enrolling them in the WRS, effective in 2023 for all new hires after January 1st. And it would also extend a period for paying off unfunded liability for both the city and county plans to 30 years, which is different and a little bit longer than our current amortization schedule. And so the budget office is wondering what the effect of this would be on the city budget. And of course, the board would have the same concern as to the effect on the pension plan. So what Dennis has asked for, Dennis Iacarino, he's asked the actuary to prepare a what's called a stochastic analysis. We do this at ERS for investment modeling. And what's involved with this is the actuary will take a look at 2,000 different economic scenarios. Obviously, it's a computer simulation. And these 2,000 economic scenarios will also generate 2,000 investment outcomes. And so in order to do this, they have obtained some data from Callen Associates as to projected potential investment returns based on our investment policy portfolio. And so we're working on this, and we'll probably have it in January, I'm told. It'll be a public record. It'll be available to the board as well, and to anybody for that matter, on the question. So this analysis will, we've seen this before in the ALM studies. The way this is reported there is, if you can visualize this, there's bar charts, and it shows the range of outcomes for contributions and for funded status for our plan. And usually the range of outcomes over 30 years is pretty wide. It just depends on how the markets perform. And it's referred to as loosely as a Monte Carlo simulation, because obviously it's a bit of a roll of the dice. We don't really know what investment performance is going to be. That's why he's looking at 2,000 different economic scenarios, but it will give people an idea as to what the potential outcomes could be. And typically, when the board does this for investment considerations, we look at the central tendency, and you know the upper quarter and the lower quarter, the 75th and 25th percentile, and then the 50th percentile. So when this becomes available, we'll make sure to get it to the board. But I just wanted to let the board know that Dennis has engaged the actuary. He did this in accordance with the request that we made, I believe it was all the way back in 2019, for collective bargaining purposes. The board approved it, and so now the work is going forward on this, and I guess it's a pretty good idea for the city to model what the impact of this legislation would be for their budget purposes, and also I'm sure we want to see it because we want to know what the impact is going to be on the fund status of our plan. However, I can't stress enough that this legislation is not even yet been introduced, and the article in the newspaper quoted the sponsor of this legislation as saying he didn't think it would come together soon. So I think it's a good idea for the city to engage in this exercise, but at this point, it's not exactly imminent. It may not ever come to pass at all. If there seems to be, I'm told, an impasse in the discussions with the legislature and the city having to do with the employment strength and public safety. So we're not sure whether this is going to ever come to pass. And of course, the other thing the legislation provides for is sales tax revenue for the city to be able to apply to its pension contribution. As I understand it, from having looked at the drafts, it would be mandatory to use any sales tax revenue to apply to contribute to the pension plan to pay off unfunded liability. So that's kind of a mouthful, but I just did want to keep the board up to date on this. I personally view this as probably the most important legislation that's ever been proposed regarding the system in its more than 80-year history, because it would effectively close the system to new hires. And we'll continue to track it and advise the board on it. So in addition to the newspaper article that I attached with this report, I also put in a copy of a city attorney opinion that Mr. McClain wrote back in March of this year that outlines the board's obligation to monitor such legislation. And also, interestingly, the board, according to its own rules, has an obligation to not only monitor this legislation, but also to do an analysis to determine the financial impact of it on the plan, and then report their conclusions, the board's conclusions, to the city council. So for that reason, we're trying to stay on top of this. And if it does get introduced formally into the legislature, we'll bring it back, along with a copy of the study, of course, that the budget office is doing, so the board can, you know, deliberate on what they consider to be the financial impact and determine, you know, what the board's position would be on this. The opinion, I did highlight some of the pages in the opinion, and I think it's worth looking at. It also goes on to say that the board has an obligation to determine the legality of such legislation. And that's an interesting subject because obviously the state legislature can enact anything it wants to, but our members and beneficiaries also have contractual and property rights in this plan. And to the extent that the legislation affects it, the board will need to take a look and determine whether the impact on the rights of our members and beneficiaries are in any way affected that's adverse or unlawful. And so again, that's quite a mouthful, but I thought best if we get this in the record and make sure the trustees all know that this is continuing to be discussed. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Allen. Are there any comments or questions on the executive director's report? All right, hearing none. I must say, Mr. Allen, I did enjoy your report. I did learn a new word, stochastic. A good one for me.
Well, it's a David Silver pen word, actually.
Right. So, do we have a motion to adjourn the meeting? Questman will motion. Thank you, Mr. Questman. Do we have a second?
I chuckle second.
Thank you. Any objections to adjournment? Hearing none, it is now 10:51 and we stand adjourned. Thank you, everybody.